talk about families and conversations and real estate. So we were talking with relatives. We had dinner with relatives last night. And of course, the conversation eventually, when you sit with relatives, turns to family dynamics. And it's just very interesting how I noted, that some members of the family speak with other members of the family, and we'll leave this very anonymous, in a very, like, diplomatic way. And other members of the family speak in a very frank way. You know, you might notice this. It all depends really on your personality. Like, some people, like, if you have a member of your family who, you know, does something to annoy you, you'll just confront it and say, that's really bothering me. I would appreciate if you wouldn't do that. And some people just kind of, like, avoid the whole thing and don't discuss. You don't know what I'm talking about?
I know exactly.
Yeah, okay. Do you all know what I'm talking about? You're looking at me funny.
Not
like,
only with family. It's also with friends.
Right. So, and we're going to see, interestingly, we're going to see two versions of the same conversation today. And we're going to see how very different they are. And obviously when we see that in the Chumash, we have to ask ourselves, like, why do we see that? Why does that distinction exist?
It's very cute.
Thank you. Okay, what is that? Why is that? Like, what is the cause for that kind of distinction that on the one hand, it's discussed one way and it's discussed another way? And then we're going to get to real estate, and of course, we obviously pretty much always have to end up on the importance of Eretz Yisrael, especially as Vayechi concludes. So we'll start at the beginning of Vayechi, right? Yaakov is about to die. This is really the parasha in the parasha, just as a brief overview. We'll see his initial last will to Yosef. Then he gives a sort of nevuah prophecy / bracha to all of the sons, right? He says, I'm going to tell you what's going to happen in the end of days. And rabbis to this very day are trying to understand what exactly he meant and trying to reinterpret what he meant. And then he dies. And then Yosef dies. That's it. You know, it's not an action-packed parsha, but it's important for the legacy of Yaakov Avinu. Okay, so we're beginning in Vayechi Mem Zayin, chapter 47, verse 28. Vayechi Yaakov be'eretz Mitzrayim, 17 shana. Vayehi yimei Yaakov shnei chayav 7 shanim v'arba'im u'mat shana. So Yaakov lived in Egypt 17 years. It's a long time. When he came down at 130, and he lived the last 17 years of his life in the land of Goshen, in Mitzrayim. Right? And his whole life, his entire life, was 147 years. 7 years and 40 and 100 years. Chavtet. Vayikruvu yimei Yisrael lamut. Vayikra livno yili Yosef. So the days of... It's a little strange. His days became close to death. Meaning?
He was about to die.
Right. But it's just a very interesting language. Vayikruvu yimei Yisrael lamut. Just point that out. And he calls his son Yosef. Vayomer lo, imna matzati chen ve'einecha, simna yadcha tachat yirechi, ve'asita imadi chesed ve'emet, al natik bereini be'mitzrayim. First we'll translate and then we'll comment on it. Okay. If I please have found favor in your eyes, please put your hand under my hip, and you should do me chesed, kindness, ve'emet, and truth, al natik bereini be'mitzrayim. Please don't bury me in Egypt. Lamed. V'shachavti im avotai. When I shall lie with my fathers. That's another, it's a euphemism for death. When I die. Unesatani mi Mitzrayim ugvartani b'kvuratam. You shall lift me up from Egypt. And you shall bury me in their burial plot. Vayomar, and Yosef said, Anochi esek kidvarecha. I shall do what you said. Vayomer, and he said, Hishavali. Swear to me. Vayishavalo, and he swore to him. Vayishtachu Yisrael al Rosh Hamita. And Yaakov. Yeah, you're into that. Very good. You said Yaakov, and Yisrael, good, bowed al Rosh Hamita at the head of the bed. So it's a little unclear, but he bowed at the head of the bed.
That's fascinating.
What do you do with it is the question. Okay, let's know. Why the. Tammy, I've kind of avoided the question because I don't have no idea why it switches sometimes between Yaakov and Yisrael. It's very hard to pin down.
Well, you have to do a study.
Even if you do a study, it's very challenging to pin down.
Yeah, but you can come up with theories. People do it all the time.
Have you ever seen a good one?
I haven't seen any.
Okay, Tammy, you got your work cut out for you.
Yeah.
Right.
Me, the biggest amateur.
Oh, come on. Okay,
please. So
bad, yeah, really. Oh, if you're interested in something, and it says, Vayikivu Yimei Yisrael Lamut. But in the beginning, it says Vayechi Yaakov Eretz Yitzrayim.
That's what I'm saying.
No idea. I don't shy away from the fact that I have no idea. Okay. I'm much more interested in the What strikes you as the way Yaakov asks Yosef to bury him in Eretz Yisrael?
So, details.
Okay.
Why does he have to swear to him?
Oh, great. Why does he insist?
Does he trust him?
What?
He doesn't trust him.
Great. Great question. Okay. Mm-hmm. Even more, but I'm actually also interested in the type and the...
Can you read it again?
Okay. Vayikru Yisrael Amut, Vayomer Livno the Yosef, he said to San Yosef, he calls to San Yosef, Vayomer Lo, Imna Matzati Chein Ve'inecha. I'm just going to translate, right? If please, I have found favor in your eyes. Simna Yadcha Atachit Rechi. Why does he say, place my hand under your hip? What does that mean? You know what that means?
It's a swearing.
Right, it's a kind of an oath. No, right, exactly, but he didn't put a hand on the Bible. When Abraham sends Eliezer to go find a wife, he says, swear to me that you will not marry my son off to some, Shiksa woman from Canaan. Okay, same thing. Is a language, is a euphemism of take an oath to me. Okay,
that it's they actually did it.
Afterwards he said, swear.
They actually put the hand on the Bible.
Right, they actually put the hand on
it. It's not just a euphemism.
It's like a very interesting, that's the way they did it. Like, put your hand on my thigh as you commit to do X, Y, Z. There's like a physical bond, a commitment to do that.
Like a handshake.
Not exactly.
meaning the handshake's sort of been watered down over the years. A
handshake used to mean something.
You used to shake on it. Shake on it, and that was your word.
Right. Yeah, okay. Right, I mean, it was a physical manifestation.
Did that have something to do with other machabah?
Nah, I don't think so. No, it was before. I don't think so. I don't know why it was a thing. He says, "V'asita imadi chesed ve'emet," and you should do with me kindness and truth. I'll not take bereini baby time. Please do not bury me in Egypt. What's again? Good, right? What's just the language? It doesn't. What? Reading it again. Now reading it again. You just have to look at the language. So something just unusual.
Yeah,
very good, very good. That's actually.
He's like begging.
Ah, excellent. He's begging him. That's correct. Like, please, please. Remember, by the way, you have to.
He's so vulnerable. He's so weak.
Remember who? But who are the people in this conversation?
Yaakov.
Right. You're talking about a father, Israel. Sorry, a father and a son. Does a father go to his son and say, "Please, if I can, if you will only just please, if you'll do me a kindness, if you just do me this one mitzvah, if
nobody
you can.
Will have no control after his death."
But that's the thing. This is what happens to us. We become our parents' parents.
You think so? I think that's what it was about?
But the parents don't often relate to their children as their parents like that.
But you're talking
even
about...
Even though the child has to relate to the parents as a parent.
Often mm-hmm. they do. Yeah. Very often. I don't know. That's what my experience. When people get older and maybe lose...
So Yaakov's language, and by the way, it's interesting. Vayomer, he doesn't say, and he says, Anochi asek yidvarecha. Vayomer, he says, Imna matzati chen ve'inecha hishavali. Would you please swear to me? He doesn't say that. He doesn't say that. He says, Vayomer, hishavali. Swear it. You know what I'm saying? All of a sudden, it was like, please, please, please. Yosef says, okay, I'll do it. Swear it.
He's like, he sounds a little desperate.
What? Very desperate. Isn't it? It's so interesting that he does sound so desperate. I that language struck me. This is not language you would expect to hear a father, Yaakov Avinu, say to his son Yosef. You know? He should say, calls his son Yosef and says, Yosef, understand, this is important. Right? I expect to be buried in
you
Egypt.
See, but this Yaakov is Yaakov Avinu,
mm-hmm.
who is a regular human being, a father relating to his son, as a father would in his dying days.
Mm-hmm.
And the Yisrael who you see is the leader of the Jewish people, and so he's like bowing down to, do you know what I mean? It's like he's more...
Now you're trying. Now you're trying.
That's what I'm saying. He's like, that's like the different personality, like the different side to Yaakov. One is like a more personal one-on-one. And one is
no, but it says Vayikru. You're stuck here because it says Vayikruvu Yumei Yisrael Lamut. It starts with Yaakov, but then it goes immediately to Yisrael.
Oh.
So I don't know. So that doesn't help you because Yisrael is asking him. It's interesting. I would actually point that out, that Yisrael is asking to be buried in Eretz Canaan,
yeah.
Not Yaakov. So we have two questions. Mm-hmm. One, why does he talk this way? Why does he talk so desperately? Can you hear the desperation in his voice? Vasita imadi. What does chesed ve'emet mean? Let's look at Rashi for a second. Let's remember this is a very famous phrase you have heard before. Rashi says, what is chesed ve'emet? Chesed she'osim im hametim, says Rashi. See Rashi on chesed ve'emet? Chesed that you do with the dying, hu chesed shelemet. I'm sure you've heard that phrase. Have you ever heard of that phrase? Chesed shelemet? Right? That is a chesed of truth. Why? She'eno mitzapeh l'tashlum gemul. Right, it's not expected to, you can't pay it back.
He
can never pay it back. That's why it's always considered, that in Detroit, the Chevra Kedisha was called the place where all the dead, you know, the burials and the funerals, they were called the Chesed Shelemet. Why? Yeah, that's the name of it, Chesed Shelemet. Yeah, beautiful. Right, and it's considered people who, I just saw an article yesterday in the New York Times, how the ritual of Tahara is making a big comeback in liberal Judaism, liberal streams of Judaism. It is lovely.
It is.
Yeah. That there are all these conservative reformed temples are forming these Chevra Kedishas to do Taharas.
Wow.
Yeah. Which is.
Yeah.
I think they feel that something is missing in their caring of the dead. It's very. No, really. I have to be honest with you. That's not, when we did funerals, there was something that Orthodox people really took pride in. And that when you went to an Orthodox funeral, A, there was Shemira. And B, like, when the funeral was over, like, we buried the dead. We did it. We didn't leave the, you know, if you ever go to a non-Orthodox, non-religious funeral, like, they go to they bring the casket to the grave, and then everybody leaves.
Yeah.
And then, like, the workers, you know what I'm saying?
Dig.
Yeah. And in an Orthodox funeral, it's just not like that. Everybody does the work. Everybody does it. We take it for granted. And I've seen many times that non-religious, non-Orthodox people were moved by that. That, you know, we take care of our own to the end, that we ensure that their burial needs are addressed. And that's... I'm talking now. And I think that's a very meaningful thing. That's what's called... That's, by the way, that's where this phrase comes from.
Your other baby.
I thought somebody was knocking.
My cat does that.
Okay. You should do... And you should... I'm supposed to concentrate. And you do, and that's what's called Chesed Shelemet. Right? That's the meaning of the word Chesed Shelemet. There's only one problem with Rashi, as beautiful as it is. What's the problem? Again. Napshat. Right. What he said, Vasita imedina Chesed Shelemet. Chesed Ve'emet. Which means what? What Yaakov is saying to Yosef is, this is above and beyond. Lifni Mishurat Adin.
But it's Emet.
Right. Sometimes
it needs to be done.
Sometimes you can ask, correct. Sometimes you ask for somebody to do something, which by all rights they don't necessarily have to do for you, but you need them to do it. It's the right thing to do.
Is there any, like...
Wait, one second. Before you get to that, why would this be chesed ve'emet? Why wouldn't it just be emet?
Can I?
Yes?
Is there anything connected here with, like, the whole selling thing and Yaakov's liability in it and saying that I'm still your father, so it's emet? You might view this as chesed because it's above and beyond maybe what you'd want to do with me, given that I kind of let the whole thing happen and led you into that trap. But...
Really? You think that Yaakov feels...
I'm wondering.
Think Yaakov feels responsibility for what happened? You're raising a whole other issue. You raise a whole other issue, which we're not going to talk about, which is a very important issue, which should be discussed, which is, did Yaakov ever find out what happened? Rashi says that Yaakov clearly suspected that he thought that the brothers were complicit. All of a sudden, the guys come home and say, "Hey, Dad, Yaakov's alive! Woo!" And like we never hear him ask the question, "Really?
What happened?
What happened?"
I think at that, initially, he would be just too happy. He wouldn't think about it.
After okay, what about in the 17 years during which he has to hang out in Egypt? You wonder. Okay, we're going to leave it at that. Why would it be Chesed ve'emet? Why is it chesed? Why is it chesed to say, bury me? I have, you know, when these conversations happen, a parent talks to a child and says, we have to have this talk. It's a horrible talk. We have to have it. I want you to know I bought burial plots and blah, blah, blah cemetery and I want you to do X, Y, Z. These are very serious things, but it's not, please bury me in my family burial plot.
I mean, let's. Is burial and chesed is where?
Why is that a chesed here?
Because he could. As his father, out of respect, he has to bury him.
Right.
He doesn't have to go to Eretz Yisrael and bury him in Eretz Yisrael. It could be anywhere.
That's a burial plot. That's where he is.
No, it could be in Mitzrayim.
Is it?
No, they're in Mitzrayim.
What? They're in Mitzrayim. So what?
He could bury him in Mitzrayim. It's chesed that he's going out of his way to go to Eretz Yisrael and bury him there.
Okay.
Okay. Why not? But that's where her burial plot is. He says, "V'shachavtim avotai, unesatani mimitzrayim ukvartani bikvurotam." Meaning, what all he's saying is, bury me where
I'm supposed to be buried.
You have to schlep
them to Eretz Yisrael. Okay. Okay, it's a chesed. Why is it a chesed? I believe it's a chesed. If you look just a little bit later on.
He wants to visit his grave.
Oh, clearly he does. And we'll see in a second what he also doesn't want. Okay, we'll see in a second what he doesn't want. 1 second.
Because he knows that's where his children and his grandchildren.
Great, we're going to get to that. Terrific. But look at Pasuk Zion. Vem Chet, Pasuk Vav. Okay? When it comes to Mem Chet, Pasuk Vav. When he comes back, he says, he's about to die, he wants to give a bracha, gives a famous bracha to Ephraim and Manasseh, okay? And he says to Yosef, Umolaretecha, asher holadeta achareihem lecha yihyu, and your birthplace where you were born after them will be for you, al shem achareihem yikaru benachalatam. What he's saying to Yosef is, your sons, Ephraim and Manasseh, they will have a nachala, a double nachala in your inheritance, which is where? In Eretz Yisrael. Okay, now he says something really interesting. Yosef gets an inheritance of Eretz Yisrael, right? There is no Shevet Yosef. What's the Shevet? Ephraim and Manasseh. Right? So he's saying, your sons take the place of you, which is an incredible bracha, because you get double. Right? In essence, he's giving him the Bechorah, he's giving him the birthright. Okay? Pasuk Zayin. Va'ani v'vo'i mi padan. When I came back from Padan, from Laban, remember? Meita alai Rachel ve'eretz Kanan baderech. Rachel died in Eretz Kanan on the way. Ba'od kivrat eretz lavo Ephrata. On the way from Ephrat, she died. And I buried her in Ephrat, on the way from Ephrat, in Beit Lechem. As we all know, where's Kever Rachel? Beit Lechem. By the way, what? It's not exactly Ephrat, but Derech Ephrat, it's not exactly where modern Ephrat is, I think it's close.
Not at all.
What? Not at all?
She's not buried where she's
at. She's not buried in Beit Lechem? It's not in Kever Rachel.
No, but I mean...
Is that close even?
It doesn't make... I went to a shir about it last year. No, about it.
Really?
And it was like...
Obvious?
It was like, yeah, well, everybody knows that...
Kever Rachel is not Kever Rachel.
About why she's not buried where she's...
But do they know where she's buried? Do they know where she's buried?
She's not buried there.
I don't know.
All right, I don't know. Right. Miriam's like, shocked. What?
She's not buried in Kever Rachel.
Rina, Rachel's not buried in Kever Rachel?
Something like that.
You've heard it? Okay, well, requires additional research. Why is Yaakov talking about this? All of a sudden he's mentioning this. You know, what in the world? What does that have to do to anything?
Because he's giving examples of like other similar persons.
You will have Yikaru Nachalatam. Oh, and by the way, I forgot to mention, when we were coming back from Padan, from Lavan, your mother died and I had to bury her and in Beit Lechem. Look at Rashi. The ekbereh
hasham. Maybe is it the spouse's responsibility to bury the child or the kid's responsibility to bury the child?
Kids were young kids. The Yosef was a child. Right? Binyamin was just born. Remember, she died in childbirth.
Yeah, okay. Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm forgetting that one.
Right? The ekbereh hasham, Rashi says, Lo helachtiha afilu lebeit lechem lachnisa la'aretz. I didn't even bring her to Beit Lechem. V'yadati sheyesh belibcha alai. He said, I know you're upset about this. Remember, he's saying to Yosef before, I want you to bury me in Maranach Machpelah. What's Yaakov thinking Yosef is thinking?
Why didn't you do that to my mother?
Yeah, what about my mother?
Yeah.
Mm. You know, Leah was buried there, but not my mother.
Still the...
What?
The buried with the beds next to the father.
Yeah, it never ends. Aval dalecha, but no. Sha'al pi hadibur kivarti hasham. I buried her there because God told me to. That she will be a help for her children. Are you familiar with the whole idea of right? Rachel, the nevuah, right? Rachel mevaka al baneha, and she's like accompanying them on the way. And they were when they were kicked out of Yerushalayim, and they saw Kever Rachel on the way. So he says, "I did it for the future. Like, understand? I know you're upset about it. So, like, there's a reason why your mother's not buried in Kever Rachel, Marna Machpelah, right? And one gets the sense that he says, "Asita imadi chesed ve'emet," that it is emet that I should be buried there. But the chesed is that you overlook the fact that I didn't bury your mother there. That you're not burying his ayin mavutav. Like, I want my parents to be buried in a place. I don't want my father to be buried in the place. No?
Where are you reading that from?
Pasuk Vav? Pasuk Zayin?
No, Father.
What do you mean?
You're reading from Rashi.
I'm looking from Rashi.
Oh, from Rashi.
Rashi. Just leave him. Okay, so if you open the door in the back, maybe she'll come around. Okay, so one gets that sense that that's the little bit of the chesed ve'emet. Why, we come to the obviously important question, why in the world is Yaakov so emphatic about not wanting to be buried in Mitzrayim? So, you all mentioned a number of interesting reasons. Yeah. Yeah, anyone? What did you say before, Tammy? Why not? Why not? What do you think?
No one's going to visit his grave.
No one's going to visit his grave.
We're not supposed to be there.
What?
We're not supposed to be there.
Or, there's the opposite fear. They will visit his grave, right? You know what I'm saying? He's afraid, like the idea of... Correct.
Well, we're not supposed to go down to Egypt to begin with.
Okay.
We mean to be.
Isn't there something we're not supposed to go there?
Well, you're not right. We're not after Egypt. We're after we got out of Egypt. We're not allowed to return to Egypt, which is very interesting because, I mean, Jews did, but even more so, like, think of how many generations of Jews died and were buried in Egypt. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Many, many hundreds of thousands of Jews died in Egypt.
And there's a generation. Was buried there, people would make holiday.
Absolutely correct. Like?
Oh,
absolutely correct. I mean, can you imagine what would happen if Yaakov Avinu's kever was in who knows, Alexandria or something? What? Yeah, somebody would have started a shrine or whatever, you know what I'm saying? Like, you could only imagine. It'd be a tourist trap now. Exactly like Uman is a great example. Okay? There's a few other reasons why not to be buried in Egypt. I didn't want to be buried in Egypt.
So what about, did they treat their... Yaakov was Yosef's father, and Yosef was the Mishael HaMelech, and I would imagine there would be some deification.
Really good. Excellent. Very good. So the Midrash talks about all of these things. You're only missing one. You've got they don't want to make it a national shrine. You got the deification, okay? You've got the national religious, right? And we got one more. There's one more you're all missing. What? Well, they mummified him anyway.
Yeah, they would.
Uh-huh. They mummified the only way, I mean...
Right.
Yeah, you got to transfer him, you got to transport him. You should just know, over history, burial rituals, which we hold unbelievably dear, have changed tremendously over time. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's hard to describe pre-biblical times. It was clear that they mummified him. To doing that, today would be considered nivul hameit to, like, the nth degree. You would never, ever, ever do it. To mummify somebody... Mm-hmm. It was also, just so you know, in the rabbinate, it was a huge issue, because funeral homes, non-religious funeral homes, if you're dealing with not a religious person, they would want to sell you every service they could. So they would sell the people on preparation, on burial preparation. Why? Because then they could, formaldehyde and, smells and inappropriate. I mean, really, it's like they would really do it because they would make money on it. It came to the point where, this is in Connecticut, where we had to have the Chevra Kedisha sign a certificate that they would hand off to the rabbi that they did a tahara, and that they were the only people that treated their body. Because otherwise there was no way of knowing that the guy didn't sell them another service that would be, we would consider, desecration of the mate. Thank God we have to deal with this here. Okay. Let's look at Rashi. Rashi says, interestingly enough.
Which Rashi?
Al na tikbereidi b'mitzrayim. Rashi says three reasons real quick. Okay. Al na tikbereidi b'mitzrayim, Rashi says, sofa lihiyot afara hinim. You see where I am? I'm sorry, in Pasuk... Chavtet. Okay? Mem Zayin, Chavtet. Right, there's a Rashi, like the last Rashi in the Pasuk. Okay. The last Rashi in the Pasuk, I'll not take Bereni. The last Rashi in the Pasuk, I'll not take Bereni. Keep going. There you go. Okay? Rashi says three reasons. One, Sofa lihiyot afara kinim. The dirt of Egypt will ultimately become into lice. Where is that? What's that a reference to? Makav kinim. So you have to, I can only so highly recommend this cool Polish set, because they give you all the midrashim which Rashi is based upon. So Rashi, the midrash says, don't bury me in Egypt. Why? Lama, shesofa le'ashel eretz mitzrayim lilikot bikinim. Okay? He says, in the end, the dirt, in order for the, how do they get kinim in the land? The Torah says that the dirt became lice. And he says, v'hiyu merachashot betoch gufi. The idea of all these lice, like crawling and creeping around his body, grossed him out. It creeped him out. So he said, I don't want to be buried here. Yeah, okay. What?
What else is going to happen?
What?
It's like that clip we were talking about where he says that, that you know about the Avot knew the future.
Yeah, correct. Well, hold on.
Yeah.
Next answer in Rashi. Do you have in the parentheses, Murachashin Tachat Gufi? Yeah. He says, the notion of being surrounded by instead of dirt, by kinim, grosses me out. Two. Usha'ein meitei chutz la'aretz chayim, ela bitza'ar gilgul mechilot. I think we discussed this once. Did I discuss this? But I'm going to tell you what it is. Okay? There's a debate in the Midrash and the Gemara whether someone who's buried in chutz la'aretz will merit in Tchiyat HaMeitim or not. This is not a well-known debate, but I think it should become well-known, because it's not clear at all who's right. Like, there's a position in the Gemara which says that, I'll just read it to you. Okay? Amru Rabotenu, Shnei Dvarim Mishem Rabbi Chelbo. This is a Midrash Agadah. This is a very clearly Midrashic, authoritative position. Lama Ha'avot Mechabebin Kvurat Eretz Yisrael. Why did the forefathers, why were they yearning for burial in Eretz Yisrael? Shemeitei Eretz Yisrael Chayim Tchila B'Yimot Mashiach. Right? Those who are buried in Israel, they will be resurrected first in the times of Mashiach. V'ochlin Shnot HaMashiach. Okay? And they will consume, or they'll live through the days of Mashiach. But Meitei Chutz La'aretz will only be, he adds in, it's not clear, will only come on the Yom Hadin, the Olam Haba. Meaning if you want to have Tchiyat HaMeitim, there's Tchiyat HaMeitim, where you have resurrection of the dead, where you come back to life and you get to live in this world again, and then there's Olam Haba, which is like spiritual reawakening. Everybody gets Olam Haba, but not everybody gets Tchiyat HaMeitim. Only if you're buried in Eretz Yisrael. Chanina Amar, okay, this is a very, really strong language. Mi shemeit b'chutz la'aretz, v'nikbar sham, if you die in chutz la'aretz, you're buried there, shtei mitot yesh biyado. It's as if he died twice. He quotes a pasuk in the Navi. Ratap pashchor b'chol yoshvei b'itecha telchu b'shevi. You're going to be exiled into Babel. V'sham tamut, there you shall be buried. V'sham tikaver, and there you shall die, and there you shall be buried. Okay? To tell you, havei shamet, one second, havei yesh biyado shtei mitot. Being buried in the chutz la'aretz is as if you died twice. It's not enough, bad enough to die in Chutz La'aretz. Being buried in Chutz La'aretz is terrible. Okay, so then it comes along the other visitor and said, Emma Rabbi Simon. Rabbi Simon said, Im Kain. Yifsiru tzadikim, shame for him, Chutz La'aretz. When you have whole generations and generations, a history of tzadikim who were buried in Chutz La'aretz. What are they supposed to do? Meaning, we assume that this is true. That being buried in Chutz La'aretz, it's terrible, and you won't merit. What happened? You don't know. Oh, it's ours. And you won't marry... Yours is quite happy. Okay? She's fine.
She doesn't understand.
Right. And she won't... Really? And she won't mention... And she won't... And so if you're buried in Eretz, in Chutz La'aretz, then you won't marry Tchiyat HaMeitim. Really? What about all these tzadikim? So it says the following. Ma HaKadosh Baruch Hu Oseh? What does God do? Oseh Lehem Michilot Ba'aretz. He makes for them tunnels underground. Makes these ma'arot, these caves. And they roll along, they tunnel their way out of the ground, right, until they come from Chutz La'aretz to Eretz Yisrael. Then, v'akadosh baruch hu noten lehem ruach shel chayim, and God awakens them, God gives them tchiyat hamitim. So it says Rashi says, if you go back to the Rashi, with that background in mind, it says Rashi, the second thing he was afraid of, She'ein meitei chutz la'aretz chayim, ela b'tzar gilgul mechilot. The rolling in the tunnels is painful. Right? It's not a pleasant process. So Yaakov says, bury me in Eretz Yisrael because I don't want to go through that. No, we don't know anything about these things. No idea. You know what I'm saying? But these are clearly authoritative resources in the...
And this is why people want to be buried here?
I mean, the sources are really strong about being buried in Eretz Yisrael, if you could do it. I mean, this is really the first time in...
There's some people who are buried, and I've got a friend whose father was buried in South Africa.
Uh-huh.
And when they had enough money, they actually moved him to be reburied.
Reinterred, 100%. The halacha very much forbids reburials in general, except for three possible reasons. One is the buried in Israel is one. If the kever is in danger or it's in a place that it could be desecrated, you can move it. The second reason is to be near avot, kever avot. Right? If you have a person who was buried in a certain place and you want to bury them in a family plot, you can reinter the person. And the third reason is to be buried in Eretz Israel. And this is the first time, really. I mean, like the Rambam wanted to be buried in Eretz Yisrael. He was buried in Israel. They buried him in Tveria, right? But it was extremely rare. I mean, who in the history could ever imagine the possibility of being buried in Eretz Yisrael? Only in the modern era is it possible to die in Chutz La'aretz and be buried in Eretz Yisrael.
I know this is a little off topic, but has there been some discussion about moving like bodies in Poland, like these pits, and moving them to Israel?
Or yeah.
Has there been?
How would you even? Are there bodies? You know what I'm saying? Moving the ashes.
It's sort of kind of that chesed shalem. I feel like. You know, I don't
right,
know.
Right. I don't have an answer for
they're
like
burying people now. They're stacking graves.
So there's nothing wrong with that.
So they could, in theory, do that.
In Mishnaic times, the Mishnah describes the burial plots that you would have. They have these caves. They buried. They dug these caves, right? They dug straight down, and then they would go in all directions.
Yes.
And it was and interestingly enough, the Midrash says what they would do is they wouldn't bury them. They would put them in the cave. Leave the body there, allow it to decompose over a period of time, a year, 2 years, however long it took. And then they would take the bones. There was a day called the Kitata Atzamot, gathering of the bones. And then their bones were reburied somewhere else, like in the family plot. Right.
That's why, like in the Navi, it spends a lot of time. They ask Sof Atzmotav, like as an idiom describing he died. It says his bones were gathered to his father.
Right.
And he took it talks bones. About it in the Navi.
Yosef's bones were also brought back. Correct. So I mean, it's very fascinating. Like I don't know if I ever told the story. What? But yeah, it's interesting because people who live here sometimes like, oh, you know, he could only come when he died. I don't agree with that. I think it's really wrong. Like you know, whatever reason a person didn't come, there's a merit to a person. There's a great schud to be buried in Eretz Yisrael for whatever reason, and that's why like, you know, if you. You always, no matter what you do, you should buy real estate in Israel. And even if it's only a very small piece of real estate, you should make sure you buy real estate in Israel.
I think there's also some criticism of people for living their lives in Chutz La'aretz and then taking.
You want to criticize somebody for living their life in Chutz La'aretz? Great, but
I'm just.
You know what I'm saying?
I'm saying there is.
It's hypocritical in a sense.
In a way.
It's so important, then live here.
You choose life for Chutz La'aretz and death for Israel. You know, like
at least it's something.
What?
I'm just saying there are.
And what's the issue with flying dead people and having kohanim on the plane?
That's totally different issue. Totally different issue. They work out. That's a halachic issue. Yeah, there are poskim who deal with that issue about you know being on the plane and kohanim. Okay, so we have that's the third reason. Another reason why did Yaakov, according to Rashi, the second reason why did Yaakov? First reason was he said he didn't want the physical discomfort of the lice. The second reason he said is because he didn't want the discomfort of the tzar gilgul mechilot. And remember, Rashi is saying this, and Rashi clearly believed in this. And where did Rashi live and die and was buried? In France. You know what I'm saying? So there's that. I mean,
where is he in France? Actually?
Provence. No, in where, what city?
He was in Vermeer. In Worms. I don't know.
In Troyes. Wasn't it Russia? Was in Troyes? In Troyes, in France? In a village in France?
Worms is Germany.
Yeah, he was in France. Okay. The third reason he says is, V'shelo ya'asuni mitzrayim avodat elilim. Because I don't want Egypt to make me into a god. And that's what Rina alluded to, that this deification, there was a danger of deification of Yaakov, and it's definitely true. And there's obviously a fourth reason. Clearly fourth reason in Shah, which is, like you guys said, burial places, like people, it's natural for children and grandchildren and descendants to be connected to and to want to connect to burial places, to family ancestry.
Why do we visit graves? Like we must see one of the only religions.
I don't think so. No. It's very common. Huh? You know, to connect to ancestors. Yeah, I don't think so. I think it's like there's an innate need to connect to our past, to connect to our history, to connect to the generations that came before us. What? Give them honor, all those things. Right? Yaakov did not want his children coming back to Egypt or congregating around Egypt. He just didn't want it. And Yosef also didn't want it. But he wanted specifically. And I find it interesting that this begging in his language one clearly gets the sense that, A, I believe he was not, he needed Yosef to commit, and he had to ask him. He couldn't tell him. And it's so interesting, he says, Vayomer, Yosef says, Anochi aseki varecha. It sounds like a God, whatever you need, I'm there for you, of course, no problem. Does it sound like that? What is it?
Salachti
kibarecha. Anisi anochi esek kibarecha. What does he say? I'll do what you said. Does it sound like a, yes, Dad, sure, of course, take it for granted.
I think this all has to do with Yosef's rise and position as you know, deputy pharaoh, I guess.
Good.
You know, and that someone in terms of Yosef's response, mm-hmm. is like, okay, granted, you know, like it's sort of, it's not, he's not speaking like a child. He is speaking like, you know, like more like an
official.
Yosef. He's giving a political answer.
Yes, it's granted. Not
to his father.
To his father. But right. I think that's also why Yaakov is sort of, when he's saying, I want to be buried in Israel, the assumption also is, and then you're going to come visit my grave, you're leaving your position in Egypt. Like, it's basically, he's asking him to sort of let loose of his position in Egypt by saying, let's move this whole thing back to Israel. Ah. He's asking for more than just a burial. He's
correct.
Asking for him to, I think, power,
like,
just go
very nice, very nice. Okay, interestingly, he says, why does he make him swear? He shavali. Okay, you asked a very famous question. Swear? He said he would do it. Swear to me? But you don't trust me? You don't believe me? Says the Ramban. Lo ya Yaakov choshed bivno atzadika ahuvlo. Right? He wasn't afraid that Yosef wouldn't listen to him. It's his beloved son. He would do it. Okay? Ramban on Lamed Aleph. Okay, shiyimre al mitzvat aviv, that he'll rebel or not follow his father's commandment. Val hadavar shivticho va'amar anuchi aseket v'rachi. Promise he'll do it. He'll do it. Aval asaken lechazek b'hainyan b'enei para. He did it. He said, "Take a swear. I want you to swear it to me," because he understood that that would have more meaning in the eyes of para. Ulay lo yitein lo reshut lehipareg mimenu. Maybe Paro wouldn't give him permission to go. The Yomar will say, "Shlach et achecha vet avadecha." Let your brothers do it. Meaning, remember, Yosef is in charge of running the whole country. So Yosef says, "I need to take a little time off. How much? A few months to go bury my father." Hello. I mean, you know, there's a whole famine going on. You're running the entire economy. I don't know if I can really handle that. Right. Okay. And so what Yosef says is, he says, my father, when Yosef goes to Paro, he says, interestingly enough, Yosef says, Aviv hishpiani lemor. My father made me take an oath. So the Midrash, a very famous Midrash on that, Aviv hishpiani. He says, my father made me swear. And Yosef invokes, as a Midrash, an oath in order to force Paro to let him go. Why? Because when Yosef first met Paro, the Midrash says, how is it that Paro gave him this huge job? Paro was supposed to be a god. So the gods were supposed to know all 70 languages. Yosef starts speaking to Paro in Lashon HaKodesh. Paro doesn't know that language. So Paro says, you'll teach me that vast language. So Yosef says, fine. And Paro says, swear to me that you'll never reveal my secret. And Yosef takes an oath. So in essence, when Yosef, the Midrash says, came to Paro and said, my father made me swear, Yosef was in essence subtly threatening Paro and saying, let me keep my oath to my father, so I keep my oath for you too. Because if not, game's up. I'm going to reveal your secret. No, he didn't.
Sounds like he didn't keep the secret, because we know that he didn't.
Well, okay, I don't understand. But it's interesting. The Ramban says that Yaakov made Yosef swear because he realized that his position would be precarious with his boss. So go to Paro and say, I took an oath to my father that I would do this, so you have to let me go. Yeah.
Maybe I'm going off on a tangent here, but when he makes him swear, he says, you know, he says he put his hand on his thigh, right? Which mm-hmm. makes me, and now I'm not exactly sure where I'm going with this, but wasn't his thigh somewhat damaged with whole Gita Nesha? Wasn't there?
Yaakov's was, but remember, Avram Avinu also did Sina Yad Chatachad Yerechi. Avram did it too with Eliezer.
Oh, he did do it with him.
Yeah, so it was clear that it was like a.
No, I was just wondering whether he was.
Biblical thing.
I was just wondering whether he was throwing in a, like, with the symbolism of the whole Gita Nesha in terms of.
I didn't see anybody who said that. I don't know. I didn't see
okay, but I guess if there's precedent.
There is clearly precedent for that kind of thing. Okay. So it's just interesting that he said swear, and this idea of swearing, it reinforces. You took an oath, and you have to keep it, and then Yosef does go to Paro. So it's just very interesting that the language that he uses, I'm going to read the Pasuk again because we're going to see a different language also. He says, V'shachavtim, let's go back to Lamed just for a second, Pasuk Lamed. V'shachavtim avotai, unesatani mimitrayim, carry me out of Egypt, ukvaratani bikvaratam. What does he want? Al na tikbereini bimitrayim. Where do you want me to bury you? What's the answer?
Not here.
Not here. So what's he saying to Yosef? Don't bury me here. Now let's look later on, very interestingly. Skip to Mem Tet.
Bury me with my
fathers. Yeah, he said bury me with my fathers, but he says specifically twice. Al na tikbereini bimitrayim. Unesatani mimitrayim. Don't bury me here. Okay, get me out of here. Skip to Mem Tet, Pasuk Chavtet. So he gives them all the blessing. Mem Tet, 49, Chavtet, 29. He gives them all the blessing. Very nice. Gives them the whole thing. The blessing is over. There's a lot of mefarshim on it. 29, Chavtet. Got it?
Yeah.
You all got it?
Yeah.
Okay. Vayitzav otam lemor, vayomer alehem. He commanded them and he said to them. It's interesting. He's no longer the begging guy. Vayitzav otam, vayomer alehem. Ani nesaf alami. I am returning to my, I'm going
to
die.
He's not talking just to Yosef.
He's talking to all the brothers. Correct.
So
all of them together.
Persona. I'm telling you, it's the guilty thing. His relationship with Yosef is different because he feels guilty.
Interesting. Well, we'll see. Okay, that's your shot. You're sticking with it. Okay. Ani ne'esav el ami. I'm going to die. Kivru oti el avotai. Bury me with my forefathers. El ha'me'ara asher b'steh afron achiti. In the cave, in the field of afron achiti. Ba'me'ara la'amed asher b'steh amachpela asher apnei ma'amrei be'eretz kenan. In the machpela field, in the cave, that's in ma'amrei and eretz kenan. Asher kana Avraham et asadem et afron achiti lachuzat kaver. Abraham, she likes that. You know, that Abraham Avinu bought from Ephron. Lamed Al. Shama kavu et Abraham bet Sarah ishto. Shama kavu et Yitzchak vet Rivka ishto. Shama kavarti et Leah. Right? He's like, there I bear Abraham, there I bear Yitzchak, there I bear Leah. Mikneh asadeh v'hamera shebo me'et b'nei chet. This is the land that we bought from the land of Chet. Vayechai yotzev le'tzavod et banav. Vayesov raglav mitah. That's it. Goodbye. You know what I'm saying? Like, the last thing he says is a very clear, no begging, no asking, no questions. You know, it's like, to Yosef he said, very simply, please, please, please get me out of here. Don't bury me here. And to all the brothers together he says, let me tell you a little story.
It's like a tour guide.
Yeah, there was this place, and there's a history of the place, and we bought it, and my grandfather bought it, and my wife is buried there, blah, blah, blah. Bury me there.
So why does he need this?
Right, obviously. Why does he go back and tell all the brothers the same thing that he told Yosef? First of all, why does he say it? And more importantly, like I said before, what's the difference between the two?
Well,
he speaks to them very differently.
He wants to instill in them the importance of doing it for themselves, for him, and for themselves and for the future.
Okay.
I think it proves Rina's theory. No, that he doesn't want to make it like, okay, you know, back to the cut of the scene. I gave the responsibility to Yosef. Mm. He's sort of bringing everybody in. He's trying to bring this family together at this point, saying, this isn't just Yosef's job. This is a job for all of you to do together.
Okay, very good. Why?
Why? Because he doesn't want this to continue into the next generation of the Yosef being
preferential.
Oh, besides the fact that maybe they're getting a little bit of a different land allotment. You know,
by the way, where were all the brothers buried?
In there.
Where are all the brothers buried?
In Egypt.
Correct. Other than Yosef. Only Yosef's bones were brought back to Eretz Yisrael.
So people know where they're buried.
What? No, nobody does anything. Nobody knows. Although, isn't there Kever Dan? Let me see. Oh, no, that's a different Dan, I think. Or on the way to Beit Shemesh?
Yeah, that's Kever Dan.
But it can't be the same Dan. I don't think, you know, it's hard to say. You know, like, why does he command all of them differently? He commands Yosef one thing, he commands the other ones differently. We'll talk about them in a second.
It's not so different. It's just The language is different.
What? Here it's much more authoritative. He tells them, he's not asking them. Fina, how many times did he say please in one sentence? Please, he said three times in one sentence. He'll say please, please, please don't bury me here. That's what he said.
Maybe because the brothers now, like if you like the brothers are sort of afraid of Yosef, and so he knows that really Yosef is the one he has to, he's the one who's really going to make things happen there.
Again, so then why tell the brothers anything? Unless he wants them, he clearly wants them to participate. Okay, he wants them all to do it together. There's a symbolism of all the children burying a forefather. There's a lot of symbolism then, and them all going to Eretz Canaan. So they're very, very, I'm going to share with you an unbelievable Ramban, which is almost shocking. And then we'll see, there's this book I actually saw in the shul, a set by this man named Rabbi Ben Zion Führer. It was very fascinating. It has a very interesting perspectives on the Parshia. No, I need that. Thank you. Okay. And I'll share with you his take on the whole thing. Okay. Look at the Ramban on Lamed Aleph. Mem Tet, Lamed Aleph. Okay. If you have the Ramban, oh, you didn't bring your Ramban. You brought the Rashi. What can you do? Okay. The Ramban, there's a few paragraphs in. It starts with the word v'yitachen. Oh, you have right, lamed aleph. But skip down, like, I don't know. Go to the next column over there. Mm-hmm. Do you have Ramban, Arlen?
No.
This is v'yitachen. Can you find the word v'yitachen? Okay. It's like Ramban says something very, very interesting. Ramban says the following. Do you find it? V'yitachen sheramaz lehem be'amro. Right, he says it seems likely that he hinted to them when he said the shama kavarti et Leah, there I buried Leah. Shekvar hichziku be'amara. He said when he buried Leah there, what he's saying is I got that cave. Why? V'amar zek kineged Esa. He said it not for them, but he was saying it because we have to grab that cave. Why do we have to grab that cave? If we don't take it. No, if we don't take it, Esav's going to take it. Shelo yi'arer hu ubana b'kvurato. Right. So there's one place left, and that he and his children won't want to be buried there. Lit'on, to claim, she'me'arash shelo ki hu ha'bechor.
Right.
He's going to want to claim that cave. Hu ha'ro'i li kaver yimavotav. And he wants to be buried with his forefathers. And it's very interesting. V'av alpi shehalach el eretz acheret. Even though he left, he went to down some other place. Yunos imoto misham. Kasher Yisu banavet Yaakov. Right, remember. Yosef, Yaakov's children are coming back from some strange place, from Egypt. So Esav's children will come back from Edom and say, no. This is not your right to bury there. Ki yirtzeh liikaver im avotav hakadoshim. He would also want to be buried with his forefathers. Vili yached itam bekvura. V'im yikaver sham Esav. And if Esav is buried there, lo yikaver sham Yaakov. Now Yaakov would not. Ki ein l'shtei mishpachot b'kvura achat. Two families can't be buried in one place. V'zeo gam ein masha amar b'kivri asher kariti li shekvar karalo akev l'achzibo. He says, I already got that land. The Ramban continues. V'zetam v'yal imo gam rechev gam parashim. He says, that's why Yosef, when they went up to bury Yaakov, he says, who went? This huge, huge contingent went up to the Midrash. Says 40,000 people went to bury Yosef. Went to bury Yaakov. Huge. And he says that also Yosef went with military accompaniment. Rechev and Parashim, with arms. Why? Ki yada zadon Esav ubanav. Because he knew Esav and his children, Ramban says, v'chein haya ma'aseh. That's what happened. Ki matzina b'sefer divrei hayamim li Yosef ben Gurion. If you look in the book of Josephus, v'zulato misifrei hakadmum, in other historical records, ki... Yeah, say for Yosifun, Yosef Ben Gurion. The guy here says Yosifun. Okay. Yosifun is Josephus, right? Right. Kibat Safo ben Eliphaz ben Esav. Esav's grandson, Safo, the son of Eliphaz. Ma? V'asa imahem kitata alze. He started a fight about it. Ad she'archu milchama. Can you imagine? There was a war at Ma'arat HaMachpelah over who would have the right to be buried there. V'tigaber yad Yosef. Yosef won. V'tafsu im yivchar gedudav. They captured them with some of their arm, military. V'aviyum l'mitzrayim. And they brought him down to Egypt. V'amad sham tvisal kol yimei Yosef. As long as Yosef lived, he was in jail. They kept him in confinement. Safo ben Eliphaz, Esav's grandson. Ubarach misham b'moto. When Yosef died, Safo ran away. V'halach ke'ele'eret ke'apanya, umalach al kitim beroma. He ran away, and he became like a band leader in Rome. Ubesov, in the end, umalach al kol eretz Italia, he became the king of all of Italy, v'hu asher malach rishon al Roma. And he started the original kingdom of Rome. V'hu asher bana ha'echal rishon v'agadol me'asher nivnu beroma. He became, Aesop's grandson became the foundation of Rome, which became the foundation of?
Italy.
What?
The Romans.
Christianity, anti-Judaism. The battle of Yaakov and Aesop began with the battle over Ma'arat HaMachpelah. It started about the fight. And what's the fight about Ma'arat HaMachpelah? He who controls the cave also gets the land. And he who gets the land lays claim to the whole inheritance of Abraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. Wow. Esau's grandson came and said, no, we want it. And Yosef said, no way. And the army of Egypt fought the good fight to protect the Jewish homeland and our essential right to the land of Israel. There's some irony in there. I just realized that.
Well,
that's an apex.
This is like where the chesed comes in.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying? It's an unbelievable, it's an unbelievable Ramban. That this is like the seat of Rome.
Ben Gurion was the prime minister.
Okay, I got to finish off. I'm going to mention to you what does Raphira say? Raphira says, why does he beg Yosef? Because I'll tell you why he begs Yosef. I'll just read to you what he says. He says, Mistaber lemarkin. Megabei Yosef chashash Yaakov shiiret mitzrayim kimo laratoh hashniya. He said, Yaakov was afraid that Yosef saw Mitzrayim as his second birthplace. What happened to Yosef? Yosef, when he was 17 already, Yosef is now old. He's been there since he was 17. He put his whole life there. He got married there. His children were born there. What does Yaakov do to Yosef's children? Remember the beginning. What did Yaakov say to Yosef's children? Your children are like my children. Your children will have an inheritance in the land the same way my children have an inheritance in the land. He's saying to Yosef, this is not your land. Don't bury me here. Get me out of here. Okay? He was afraid that Yosef would see this land as if it was his homeland. Okay? He says, Adarabba, ulai bishvilo. Maybe Yosef saw like Canaan as like a foreign place. Can you imagine? You spend your whole life somewhere. Like, it's so mentally, we can understand this so much. Like, yeah, of course, Eretz Yisrael is like my homeland. It's like the place where I'm going to be buried. Maybe. But where am I really from? What's my true identity? Is Yosef's true identity a Canaanite? Or does Yosef see himself as an Egyptian? It speaks very strong. What?
It happens here. That's what you mean.
Yeah. What do you mean?
Family who grew up, the kids were born and grew up in America, and they moved here when the kids were in middle school.
Right.
And they're going back because the kids don't want to be here anymore. They want to go back.
Right. You know, like, and so, like, and so he says again, please, 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 I'll not take your reign to be Mitzrayim. This is not your place. As much as you belong, and as important as you are, and as much as you've risen to power, and as great as Egypt has been to you, this is not your place. To the other sons, he says, you just have to tell them all that, because they came down much later. They built their lives in Canaan. So he says, he gives them the whole history. This is our homeland. We go back to our homeland, to the Me'arah, to the forefathers. But to Yosef, all he says is, I'll not take Bahraini but Mitzrayim. Understand that your place, as much as good as it's been to you, and as wonderful as it is, and as lovely as great as Mitzrayim has been, and as much as you feel home here, and you have a foreign name, and your children, and your wife, this is not your home.
It's like he's presenting a case in court.
Yeah.
These are the facts.
You know, And I think that it strikes us very, very powerfully, very, very strongly, you know, that Yaakov sensed the danger of the lure of Mitzrayim. That it becomes so great, and it becomes so powerful, and it becomes such a part of who we are, the Jewish people. Nonetheless, and I think, I personally think, the notion of burying in Israel is valuable for only that. Right? If people are burying their parents in Israel, it creates a connection for them, for the living, that's indelible. You know what I'm saying? Like, and I say to my, I think like, oh, who knows, like my father, I've said before, my father's buried here in Beit Shemesh. I never visited my father's grave until I was 18. And he died when I was 9 or 10, whatever. Why? Because it was not, it was just there. You know, and that creates an impression.
I've got a cousin who comes once a year to Israel to visit a grave.
Right.
And that's a reason you tell.
But that's a reason.
That's what I'm saying.
It's a strong connection. And you don't realize how strong that connection is, how powerful it is. If only that. I'll not take a rainy me inside. Don't bury me here. Take me there to Israel.
The only one that's living for me is
Yeah. Okay.